We've made contact with Johan van Lochrenberg, former SARS executive and author of the very recently published and extremely readable Death and Taxes, How SARS Made Hitmen, Drug Dealers and Tax Dodgers Pay Their Dues. Johan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John, and good afternoon to your listeners.
I'm sorry that we weren't able to connect with you on Skype, and this line, I hope, holds out for us. I'm sure that you will have read on Daily Maverick or News 24 earlier today a story by Paulie van Wyk and Kyle Cowan, how Moyani's SARS illegally paid 420 million rand in VAT refunds to the Guptas, and it had been widely published that they had issued some VAT refunds problematically, but this takes it to a whole new level. Did that surprise you in any way? I'm sure not.
I'd rather not comment on my time at the, you know, after I left the Revenue Service. I'm just a spectator like you are.
Yeah, but you're a spectator with insider knowledge that the rest of us don't have, and you do write about Tom Moyani and his time there.
My publisher didn't tell you that I'm nervous when I'm interviewed. No, it doesn't shock me at all. I think one chapter in my book, I list almost 100 articles since early 2015 until when the book was published that were all negative stories coming out of that institution, which is worrying.
I don't want to go into the detail of the book too much because it's tax affairs are by their nature complicated, and I found it really interesting to read your take on the insider's take on the Dave King matter and on Gary Porritt and Tigon and all of these issues. And I want people to discover that for themselves and just talk a little bit more generally about your time at SARS. Something that I didn't realize was how much flack you took when you joined SARS from white colleagues who were uncomfortable about the new South Africa, and you were avowedly in favor of the new South Africa and trying to make it work. And that, I mean, so right from the beginning of your days at SARS, it wasn't easy for you.
Well, I don't think that was a unique sort of experience in the civil service by and large. I think what you had when political freedom came in 1994 and those first few years of government of national unity, and suddenly when that collapsed and the democratically elected government took over, there was this sort of tension between the old senior hands that still sat in their positions and their crown princes and princesses who had high hopes to occupy high offices, and the new incumbents that came into government. Certainly there was a tension there, and that tension in my particular case actually remained almost up to the end when I left the Revenue Service. Some of my most fiercest detractors remained.
Also intriguing for me, you know, apart from the view into Barry Tannenbaum, just another one of the cases that you do, and how SARS saved the Springbok. That's a chapter that people must read as well. It's fascinating to read how the culture of excellence at SARS developed, and the critical role that Ivan Pillay, for whom you obviously, you and he are still on trial together, but the obvious respect and affection that you have for this man, and how it went from, you know, reasonably efficient organization to an organization which was visited by tax experts from around the world to see how it functioned, and then the slow decay as the state capturers fought against you.
Yes, John. I think the Revenue Service of South Africa is a marvelous story, and many case studies have been conducted on its growth from the early years of democracy until its height. And it is sad what's happened. I have a lot of respect for Ivan Pillay, indeed. But I have a lot of respect for all the hundreds of people that I worked with over the 16 years that I had the opportunity to serve there. There are, unfortunately, you know, when you write books like this, you can't have too many characters, and I had to choose. And Ivan Pillay was one, because the focus is predominantly on the enforcement and risk component of the revenue service. But there are many, many other people like Ivan Pillay around, many still remaining within the revenue service, and we should support those people.
So in the presence of those pockets of excellence, it's bigger than pockets of excellence within SARS, mean that with the right kind of leadership, and Mark Kingans, the acting CEO, the chief financial officer, has been confirmed as permanent now. So things are happening at senior level at SARS, which suggests that with the excellence still in the institution, it can get back to the relentless and vigorous pursuit of tax evaders and criminals and organized crime purveyors that was characteristic of most of the years that you spent there.
Certainly. No, I have no doubt that there are many, many people, many who I remember fondly, who are very capable of putting the revenue service back into the news for the right reasons again. If they're afforded the opportunity to do so.
Mm. I know that you were asked this question in a previous interview. I think about the first book, Rogue, the inside story of SARS Elite crime-busting unit. But perhaps some of the cases, Tannenbaum, Dave King, Porritt, the incredibly complicated cases, and then there are the political cases. There's Zuma, there are the Guptas, there's Julius Malema. Did you treat them, you say you did, you really treat them exactly the same? There was no difference in your approach?
I think they would be best placed to answer that question, but certainly from my perspective, a taxpayer was a taxpayer, and, you know...
Julius Malema said that there was a conspiracy, that it was politically driven, that his tax affairs were fine, and whatever problem there was, he had nothing to do with. He was just following advice, and you were not treating him like an ordinary taxpayer.
No, he did say so initially, and then he changed his story, and he ultimately apologized for saying that. And subsequently, he's changed his story again, I see. But the fact of the matter is... you know, there were often instances where people who were found wanting from a tax perspective used the stratagem of attacking the institution or attacking specific individuals who were engaged on those cases. And the one thing they never ever claimed when they used these strategies to attack us was that their tax affairs were in order, which one would expect somebody to say if you're going to start pointing fingers. But I think generally, John, if you read the book, you'll see that most of the stories have a common theme where it starts off often with great acrimony and, you know, the revenue service on the one side, the taxpayer on the other side, and a great divide in between. And over time, how Midway was found, which I think kind of speaks to the South African tale itself, that compromise and listening to each other and moving toward each other, looking for what's common rather than what's different, can have a happy ending.
Wow, I'm not sure that we still maintain that ability. We seem to be coming ever more disputatious with each other. Do you think Jacob Zuma's tax affairs are in order? Do you think he's been paying the tax that he needs to on the fringe benefit of Nkandla and so on? Come on, give me an answer.
I really couldn't say. You know, the story that I tell in the book relates to a particular period, and I was able to tell the story because Mr. Zuma himself related it in an affidavit before High Court, and that was up to the period 2005. Now, beyond that, I'm lawfully and legally not able to comment on the taxpayer affairs of anybody, including Mr. Zuma.
That is a pity. Do you think you'll go back? I know you've resigned. You're still facing criminal charges. Ivan Pillay can't go back. There's, as you point out in the book, there's quite a lot of chat around that SARS would like him back. He can't while they're criminal. And you suggest that one of the reasons why the criminal charges have not been dropped is to prevent him going back to SARS and putting his own particular stamp on the organization again. Would you go back if you were asked? Would you ask if you could go back?
I wouldn't go back, John. I'm always there for anybody to pick up the phone and call me if they seek advice or some input. But my priorities in life have changed. I've moved on. It's been some years since I've left, and I think there's a next generation that now needs to come up and come through the ranks and deliver the new set of stories for us for the future books.
What would suit you better, Jan, to have the charges against you dropped or to have what Jacob Zuma has often claimed he wants but seems desperate to avoid, your day in court so that you can, your lawyers can call people and examine them and you can tell your story in a court of law? Which would you prefer?
Well, it's not, you know, now we're going into territory which I've been advised to not to discuss publicly, but I don't think it's as simple as that, John. It's not as if I'm going to get an opportunity to climb in an accused box and tell my whole story about how different sets of propaganda was being driven by different sets of people and for what end and so on. Criminal cases, by their very nature, very narrow. They focus on the evidence that's in the docket, and they focus on the charges that are being brought. I have to do what every other person who stands accused does, is I must exert my rights, and I'm innocent, absolutely innocent. My lawyers have been in communication with the prosecuting authority in this regard, and I'll continue to do whatever the law allows me to do to ensure that my rights are treated fairly.
Johan van Lochrenberg, thanks very much for chatting to us this afternoon. Sorry that the arrangements didn't work out as we planned. And the very readable second book is called Death and Taxes, How SARS Made Hitmen, Drug Dealers and Tax Dodgers Pay Their Dues.